Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Steve Bowes. This is the HR Happy Hour, episode 135, Simulation Learning. We had a great show tonight, a really fascinating, interesting show, a new topic for the HR Happy Hour show. We're really excited about bringing this topic to you tonight. I'm glad you're with us. Really quickly, tonight's episode is being recorded live on February 9th, 2012. So if you're listening back to the archive on the replay, welcome as well. So, before we go any further, of course, I want to thank our show sponsors, Acquire. Acquire is Acquire, A-Q-U-I-R-E. It's proud to bring you this episode of the HR Happy Hour Show. Acquire is also proud to provide HR executives like you, a wealth of valuable workforce planning and analytics wisdom at Acquire.com. That's A-Q-U-I-R-E.com. From informative and educational webinars, videos, white papers, podcasts, HR success stories, and more, Acquire shares free insights and actionable information that you can use to do your job better. Visit Acquire.com to learn more. So thanks very much to Acquire. So great to be back with you. And it's our calling number, of course, on the HR Happy Hour Show, 646-378-1086. Press 1 if you want to get into the conversation tonight or ask a question, leave a comment. Our back channel on Twitter, we'll keep an eye on as well. Our hashtag, as always, HR Happy Hour, and we will keep an eye on that. So many thanks and welcome to the folks who are listening tonight. So with me tonight, I'm going to bring him on right away because he's sort of riding shotgun with me before we bring on our official guest for the show. He's the great longtime occasional co-host, occasional guest host, longtime listener of the show, Mr. Paul Hebert, Mr. Incentive, as I like to call him, the big incentive. Paul Hebert, welcome. How are you tonight?
I am fascinating, Steve. People are going to get tired of hearing me, I think.
Paul, anytime, man. I got to tell you, I feel like I reward the loyal listeners, the longtime supporters, and you certainly, my friend, are chief among them. So what is happening in the world of incentives, recognition? What is happening, Paul? What's going on in your world?
Well, you know, we're busy this time of year. I am anyway, because I'm just kind of doing a lot of analysis and stuff on programs that finished up last year and working with a few other companies on their marketing plans in the incentive space. So it's been a busy start of the year, so I'm happy about that. That's for sure. I'm hoping that that's a kind of a leading indicator for the rest of the world. That's for sure. But no, things are going just fabulous. I can't, you know, if I was any better, I'd have to sit on my hands to keep from applauding.
If it were any better, you'd be a proud Gamecock fan. Isn't that true, Paul? Can we say
well,
that? That's really the last thing. We'd really have to push you over
know,
the top.
I may have to be, depending on the letters that come in this spring, because my son's
already been
accepted at USC.
I'll tell you what, I've got that
in
my notes. Because I know one of your sons, I think you have more than one son. Is that correct, Paul? Correct me if I'm wrong.
One that I know of. Ha, ha, ha. No, I have a son and a daughter.
Okay, but your son is the son who's – this is what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of your son is a very highly regarded baseball prospect, right, a very talented baseball player and is considering his options, right? So I'd love for you to brag on him a little bit if you don't mind.
Well, he wouldn't be happy for me to do that. But, yeah, no, he's a pretty good ball player. He's had a couple of colleges calling him. But he's got his heart set on Clemson. I know that's unfortunately is going to go against your grain.
Yeah,
he's been accepted at USC.
That's unfortunate.
He's waiting for that letter from Clemson. I think he's more of a, you know, he's been down to a few of the football games. As you know, you go down to Death Valley for a Clemson football game, and that's just crazy. And I think he thinks that's the way it's going to be 24/7, and he's got a rude awakening coming.
Well, let's hope he sees the light, Paul, and decides to join the Gamecock Nation, if you will. And anyway, my best wishes to him and to you as well. So, Paul, man, thanks so much for being with us. I appreciate you sitting in with us. You helped really organize the show tonight, and much thanks for that. So thanks for hanging out with us tonight.
Well, you know, I know that, you know, sometimes we, you know, I've said this before, is I don't play in HR, but I orbit it quite a bit. So I'm involved with things that other people are doing. And, you know, one of my goals when I started out on my own was I would never not help somebody if they ask for some help. And the person that you're going to be introducing here in a few minutes asked for some help one time. And I chimed in like I always do. And I just got so jazzed about what this simulation learning can do, how cool it is that me and her have been working together on a couple of projects. And I thought, you know, every time I talked to somebody about it, they were like, well, what is that? So that's why I thought, you know, let's spend a few minutes, let's chat it up and see what the rest of the world thinks. And, you know, if we can bring it to the audience at HR Revolution or HR Happy Hour, I mean, that's the smartest group of people in the world. So let's throw it out there and see if they think it's as cool as I do.
Yeah, it's a great point, Paul, and I do think I'd agree with you for the most part that our audience is a, you know, fairly savvy audience, a pretty adept audience. So I'd love to bring this topic to light with our audience and see how they feel about it as well, because it is a bit of a new topic for many of us, and it's going to be interesting to talk about it. So we have a great guest waiting in the wings to talk about simulation learning. A couple more last announcements before we get to her is real quick. ERE Spring in March, late March, March 28th through 30th in San Diego. If you're in the recruiting space particularly and you haven't sort of made your plans to get down there, I think you should check that out. You can learn more at ere.net. The HR Happy Hour show will be doing our webcast thing. We'll be hosting the live stream on the web for a couple of days, but we'd love to see you there. And if you come down to ERE in San Diego, please make sure you find me, and we'll figure out how to maybe even get you on the webcast as well. So we'd love to see you on there. The other thing I wanted to mention real quick is Trish McFarlane, longtime friend of the show, frequent guest. Trish McFarlane and I will be presenting at a conference board event called the Social Media for HR Seminar in New York City in April. That event is April 17th and 18th in New York City, and you can learn more at theconferenceboard.org. Really excited about that event. I love New York City. I believe, Paul, and just to throw this out to you, you'll appreciate this, I believe there's a Knick game going on like the second night of that conference. So in addition to going to that great conference, you can come to see the Knicks and the Celtics with me if you like. So fantastic. That. So, and then just lastly, before we bring on our guests, really big news today in the space, just shocking news. It dominated the cycle, dominated Facebook, dominated Twitter, was everywhere today. And I'm talking about, of course, Shamrock Shakes are back, and they are available nationwide. Paul, I don't know if you caught this. You've been busy, I know, but I got one today. It was fantastic, and I mean, this is a great time of year.
Absolutely.
For the Shamrock
Shakes. You have to. Yeah. That and the McRib. I mean, the two big dates. I mean, it's almost like the winter and the summer solstice.
That's how you plan your calendar. You plan your schedule.
Absolutely.
McRib, Shamrock Shake. That's it.
Yeah.
And you're lying. I'm going to say this out right now. You're lying if you don't go and get a Shamrock Shake, because I know you are. I know you're doing it. So I was excited to have my first Shamrock Shake of the season. All right, so let's get on with it. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bose. Paul Hebert sitting in as well in the co-pilot's chair. Let's bring in our guest. We have a great guest tonight. Her name's Kay Mann. Kay Martin Mann has found her. I'm going to read this, Kay, and I hope I don't embarrass you. But it's really cool the way it's written. Kay, hang in there. Kay has found herself in an unlikely profession. The quiet girl who seldom spoke up in class, in high school or college, now finds herself at the front of the room, leading organizations and individuals in achieving their goals. So that's cool. She has worked with organizations including logistics, healthcare, manufacturing, and distribution, guiding them to improve employee engagement, customer service, labor relations. But she knows she doesn't have all the answers, so she has used simulation learning to guide individuals in learning for themselves where their skills and challenges lie and in finding improvement. Her clients include companies all over the place, all over the world, United States, kind of everywhere. So, Kay, you're a graduate of Clemson University. I'm not going to hold that against you. And I'm calling you USC, so I'm claiming you as well as a proud Gamecock, even though you're denying it. Kay, welcome to the HR Happy Hour show.
Steve, thank you for that welcome. But yeah, before we go any further, I have to make sure that everybody knows I don't call myself part of the Gamecock Nation.
No, I'm
sitting in an office that is fully decorated in Clemson colors. So if anybody ever heard me say I was a Gamecock, that just would not work at all.
Kay, you know what? I'm going to let that go because you're my guest, and I'm welcoming you to the HR Happy Hour show. So I will leave that aside, and I'll leave it at this. You know, I'm northern by birth and by upbringing, but if I ever get back to South Carolina, Kay, I'm going to nail my feet to the ground, and we'll just leave it at that.
We'd appreciate that, Steve. We'd more than welcome you to come. And at some point, I'll get you to Death Valley, and maybe by then Paul's son will be there as well.
I'll tell you what, I have attended a couple of games in Death Valley, so I know the vibe, and, you know, I've been there, so it is a fantastic experience. And I'm sure for the 99% of our audience who doesn't care at all about, you know, South Carolina football, we completely have turned them off. But, Kay, I'd love for you to tell us, you know, I read your bio, and it's great, but tell us a little bit more about yourself, a little bit more about what you're doing, and then we'll dive into the topic of simulation learning tonight.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate that. Just a little bit about me. I am from South Carolina. This is home. I've had the privilege of living in the upper part of South Carolina my whole life, but I've also had the privilege of traveling and meeting some absolutely wonderful people. And I think that's part of the fun of my job is it seems that every week another interesting person comes into my career and they come in as an acquaintance and they leave as a friend. And to me, that's just a really neat opportunity that I've had to do. I'm the mom of four kids. I have two sons and two daughters. I actually have a son who is a sophomore at Clemson. So, of course, that's where my heart is going to lie. So most of the time you'll find me on a baseball field, so I understand where Paul is coming from. Or you'll find me at a wrestling meet or at a football game. And this year my youngest son decided to take up golf. So I am rapidly trying to learn everything I can about golf. So needless to say, this is a sports-oriented household, and we love every minute of it.
Hey, that's great. And, you know, all the kidding aside about the Clemson and the South Carolina stuff, you know, it's easy for me to just to push that off, quite frankly, because of you know, how successful the Gamecocks have been in the last several years against Clemson. So I'll push that aside for the moment. And let's talk a little bit about, our topic tonight. You know, it's a fascinating topic. And I'm just going to throw it out there, you know, because I have a feeling, Kay, and Paul as well, that some folks listening tonight might not be familiar with the topic at all. So let's start with a really level set. What do we sort of mean when we're talking about simulation learning, and how is that relevant for organizations or important for organizations today? I'd love for you to sort of level set us, Kay, on that.
Great. I'd be glad to do that, Steve. Simulation learning it's not probably what people typically think of a simulator that a pilot is going to use or a video game that something has been simulated and they're sitting watching it. Simulation learning is real world. We actually put people in situations that they might have encountered. And the reason for doing that, we all go to school, we learn how to do things, we get the information we need, and we're put in the workplace. Some of us start at the bottom, we work our way up, we have all kinds of situations. But nobody ever really says, here's how you deal with that problem. Here's how you achieve that goal. Here's how you tackle that situation. For a lot of us, it's trial and error. And unfortunately, sometimes those errors that we make in the real world can be catastrophic. So simulation learning is a way of putting people in situations where they encounter those same situations. They encounter real-world problems, and they have to come up with a solution. They either have to have something in writing, maybe it's via the telephone. And the part that really makes it fun for people to learn, we have people in place. We will have somebody playing the part of a customer who says, I've not gotten good service. from this fictitious store that we're using in the simulation.
Right.
And so it gives people an opportunity to, wow, how do I answer that question? How do I make sure that my body language is what it needs to be? How do I make sure that, yes, I may be having to say no, but I say no in the right way so that we don't lose a customer?
Right. It feels a bit, you know, in that example that you gave, Kay, a bit like that sort of mystery shopper thing, but maybe a bit less punitive and a bit more educational. Is that a fair way to think about it? Like we're, you know, like we sent, like companies have often sent mystery shoppers in a retail environment, certainly, right, to sort of, you know, take check or keep score of the performance of employees. But this is a bit more, it's not about catching people, it's about improving people's performance. Or do I have that right, Kay?
That's a great picture of it. Yes, mystery shopping, sometimes you're looking for what has gone wrong, what do we need to improve. In simulation learning, we encourage people to take risks. One of the things that we often say is, here's your chance to be different. Because if you try something different and you have a problem, you make a mistake, it doesn't turn out the way you want it to, look what you gained. You learned from it. You realize, wow, I don't want to do it quite that way, but I can tweak it the next time and do it this way. So it rewards people for trying something new, for taking a risk, for looking at a different way of solving a problem, and yet they're having fun while they're doing it. It's intense. It's very intense. It's interactive. But it's one of those situations where people get a chance to try something different. In the work world, if you try something different on a job, it may have a negative consequence, and that's just not something we can afford in today's environment.
Yeah, and Kay, I want to circle back to that a little bit as well. And Paul wrote a very interesting post today where he talked about some of these themes today that I want to touch upon as well. But let me do a quick reset. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bowes. Our guest tonight is Kay Mann. We're talking about simulation learning. Paul Hebert is with us as well tonight. Our call-in number, 646-378-1086. Please do feel free to call in to ask a question or make a comment. I'll even allow Clemson fans to call in tonight. That seems only fair, seemingly I'm outnumbered 2-1 tonight, but that's fair enough. And, of course, our back channel hashtag on Twitter is HR Happy Hour. We'll keep an eye on that as well. So, Kay, that's really sort of interesting and good overview, I think, of sort of the fundamental concepts of simulation learning. But, you know, the one thing that struck me as you talked about simulation learning is it seems a little bit different than maybe the traditional way that organizations might, you know, train people, bring people up to speed, introduce new technologies, new processes, or train new hires, whatever the case may be. So what are sort of the key couple of things you'd say how this is really different from the normal / traditional ways organizations train people or help upskill their people compared to simulation learning?
Good question. One of the major differences is, and there's a place for it, don't get me wrong, I use it as well, in that we have people in an audience and we are explaining procedures, we're explaining processes, we're explaining how we want them to do something. Simulation learning differs in that people are actually practicing those processes, those policies, and those procedures. They have an opportunity to experiment a bit with something, to actually use the words and make them their own. We often will have a program on communication, and we will say to people, when you answer the telephone, here's the greeting we'd like you to use. And we present it in the program. People will say, you know, okay, this is how we're going to answer the telephone, but they haven't quite made it their own. In simulation
right.
learning, we actually have them answering the telephone. They are
right.
actually faced with somebody calling in with a question, with a situation. And so it makes it real. It makes it a bit more alive than a traditional classroom setting, although both can be used beautifully.
Okay. So it's a bit of a complementary kind of program. So, there's always going to be like – because one part of it, Kay, sounds to me like, wow, this is kind of – it's more involved. It sounds a little bit more like you've got to be a is it fair to say that an organization needs to be a little more committed to the training program in order to sort of create these kind of simulation programs? Because it sounds more like more of an investment is required than
it
in
is.
A traditional read this and do this. Is that fair to say?
Very fair to say, and that's exactly right. People become invested in this because when the program ends, when the simulation is done at 5 o'clock or you know, whatever time we finished in the afternoon, they're ready to use those skills. They're ready to implement what they've learned. And so when a company invests in their employees, when they invest the kind of time for a person to go through simulation training, and on the flip side, when an employee invests themselves in actually being an integral part of the training, it's a bigger investment than having sat in a traditional classroom setting and just listened to something. Right. We encourage people in simulation training, give it their all. Don't sit back. Don't be hesitant. You know, this is your time to step forward, to take a leadership role when it's appropriate. When perhaps on this situation they back off a bit, but we encourage people to really put themselves into it. You know, we go back and we think about kindergarten, and we give children blocks and balls and crayons and books and everything, and we tell them, touch it, use it, play with it. We encourage hands-on learning. Somewhere along the way, we seem to move away from that learning process, and we put people in traditional classrooms all the way through high school, college, and then
right.
the work world.
Right.
Simulation
yeah, no,
learning wraps back around and almost says, go back and remember what it felt like when you were in kindergarten, and they encouraged you to play. They encouraged you to use everything in the room, and they even encouraged you to figure out a different use than what it was originally intended. That's a good description of simulation learning. We're encouraging people to get hands-on again and to experiment with what they are trying to accomplish.
Well, and if I can jump in here real quick.
Yeah, please, Paul. I was about to ask you a question. Go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things that I found, because Kate brought me in, and I was watching the back channel, and they're talking about actors, and there are, you know, the actors, that the people that are playing roles, whether that be a consumer or even a distribution manager or another employee, there are these roles. But what's kind of really cool about this whole engagement simulation that I found anyway is you take that opportunity to practice and to actually do the thing that we're talking about, but they're doing it under a ton of pressure. It's like we compact a year's worth of experiences into an afternoon or a day, and these people are being interrupted by phone calls and things like that, and so that pressure builds, and it cements that learning. I mean, it's kind of like when, you know, all of us have been under a deadline, and we're trying to cut and paste something in Word or PowerPoint, and we don't really know how to do it, and then we finally figure it out at the last minute. You never forget those commands now because you learned them under pressure, you learned them in the real world, and it's kind of like that, and it's just really exciting and really high energy.
Yeah, Paul, that's a great point. You know, but it feels like you've got, you know, I was thinking of this, you think about the Seinfeld episode, right, when Kramer and his buddy, right, had to simulate or sort of act out the diseases that they had, right? They had to, but it was a simulation learning exercise for the doctors, right? That was the idea. It was funny. It was a goof and all that, but
yeah.
Right? It was for the trainees or the medical students, right, to learn how to assess those diseases.
Right.
It was kind of the same thing, right? It was a much more vivid, a much more, I don't know, like you could commit to it a little bit more, right? Because it was happening in real time, in real life, right in front of you, versus just reading about it or
yeah,
looking at some pictures about it, right? So
exactly,
that's really cool. So let me, Kay, I'd love to talk to you, ask you about, you know, because it seems here's the thing, you know, we talked, Paul, I think maybe touched upon it, and I've seen some tweets about it as well, about things like airline pilots and sort of this, you know, certain types of jobs or certain types of training where, you know, it's hard to really train, you know, it's either dangerous or prohibitively expensive or complex, and where simulations have sort of become mainstream. But are we talking about those types of things, or there are more more broad applications, okay, that you see of simulation training besides those really, you know, maybe fairly obvious ones that we see, like airline pilots or maybe the, you know, soldiers we've seen a lot about. I'd love for you to comment about that, okay.
Yes, it's become much broader because now we're in the situation where, I mean, look at what's happened in the last 2 to 3 years. A lot of your managers who have 10, 15, 20, 25-plus years of experience are gone. For one reason or another, they've left the organization. And with them walked out all of that experience when we as the new manager, we as the new hire could go three doors down and say, I have this situation. I've encountered this problem. Have you ever had this in your career? And that person says, oh, yes, I've had this, you know, 20 times in my career, and here's how I dealt with it. Multiple ways. Let's come up with a solution for you. We don't have as much of that anymore because those people with all the experience typically aren't there now. So simulation learning is a way to create some of those problems right now that people have to deal with and have to find solutions to them. I'll give you an example. One of the situations that we often put in a simulation is Facebook.
Okay.
It's real now. It's out there. We're not ever going to go away from Facebook. And people are using Facebook positively, and they're using it negatively. And believe it or not, there still are a few people who have not dealt with Facebook. They don't understand it. So in
right,
the simulations,
there's a few. Right.
There's a few, not many, but there's a few out there. So we put Facebook in the simulation, and we actually came up with pretend things that people had written about the company, and they were negative.
Oh, so okay, let me interrupt you for a second. So it might
sure.
be maybe a customer service kind of thing, or someone who's representing a company on social media, on Facebook, and you're helping them or helping them understand what might happen on Facebook? Is that sort of the idea?
Bit of that, but it's more of if let's say that your customers have gotten upset with something. Remember, it used to be that if a customer was upset at church or at the garden club or wherever they were, they told their friends they were unhappy with your service. Now, they walk out the door, they sit in the parking lot, they pull up Facebook, they create a Facebook page for people who don't like XYZ company.
Right. Damn those
and
people.
Then
I hate those people. But you're right. You're absolutely right.
But it's there. And
yeah.
So then now they've connected with their 100,000 friends that they have on Facebook. And so you immediately have people who see these negative comments about your store or your company or whatever it is.
Right.
We're giving people an opportunity now to, how do you combat that? Either how do you keep a person from walking out unhappy? What can you do to provide exceptional customer service for them? What do you do to stay in touch with your employees? Remember the situation in California, I think 2 years ago, where the person was going home after she finished her shifts at work, writing negative comments about her employer on Facebook.
Right.
So
right.
How do we keep people from doing that when we would really rather them come to us and say, here's what I'm not happy about. Can we adapt this? Can we change this? In simulation learning, we're giving them a chance to experience that through the simulations and have somebody who says, yeah, I've been going on Facebook writing negative comments about the company. You know, how do we deal with it? What policies do we have in place?
Yeah, Kate, that's a very fascinating example. I really like that example because certainly in the news in the last, you know, couple of years, we've seen many instances, right, of many high-profile instances of organizations that have been a bit caught off guard or brought down or at least damaged to some extent, and it's arguable, right, the long-term damages, but from sort of negative experiences on social media, whether it was employees or customers or you know, just a general pile-on of a hashtag that got misused, right, or just it was ill-advised. And so I think it makes sense, as you suggest, that perhaps some experience, some experiential training, some simulation kind of learning of what of how you might need to react in those instances might have benefited these companies before. But Kay, my follow-up to that is, when I think it's a super idea, is it hard to sort of orchestrate that and sort of keep that going? Because in a situation like that, where maybe maybe a company's gone wrong, or there's been some bad press, and there's a big sort of social media backlash, like that tends to, you know, at least in my experience that I've seen, that builds over time. It tends to maybe mount. It grows quite a bit. It takes a little bit of time for it to play out. In the simulation learning environment, are you able to sort of sustain that, I don't know, that energy or that the way that sort of seems to play out in the real world?
Yeah. Go ahead, Paul.
I was going to jump in just because this was kind of one of the roles I played recently, Steve, and it had to do with the Twitter and Facebook. And I was a news reporter, and mm-hmm. we had the teams in different rooms in this building, and I would just interrupt the team. I'd come in, and I had a cameraman with me, and I had a microphone, and you know, I'd come into the room, and I'd say, "Hi, this is Paul Hebert from Action News." And I just grab any one of the people in the room and say, "We've been following Twitter and Facebook, and it's just blowing up about this DUI charge against one of your employees. What do you have to say about that?"
Right.
And so now they have to know, how do they answer that? Are they going to respond? Do they push me off to somebody else? Does anybody come in and become the lead on that? And then later on, we're talking about something else, and I'll bring in, "Oh, and how does that relate to the fact that Twitter is saying, you know," so that we continually bring in the fact that they have to worry about things outside the room that they're in that day.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, interesting. No, that helps sort of explain it. But I mean, I think that's very cool. Like, it's a bit immersive. It's a bit realistic, and it's very much right. Because right, Paul and Kay, I mean, these are the kinds of things, until you've gone through them, you don't really know what they're like. Is that fair to say as well? And I guess maybe one of the points of simulation learning too, right?
That's extremely fair. And let me add to a bit of what Paul was saying. One of the things that I've had people say is, "Well, my associates would never have to deal with Facebook. They don't access computers during the day. They don't use email." That's a fair statement, and I agree with that. And what we're doing in simulation learning is, we're not necessarily teaching people how to deal with every situation they would ever potentially encounter, or expose them to situations that they're not going to encounter. The beauty of it is giving them that exposure of having
right.
them think about, "Oh, here's Facebook," to go back to that example. No, they may never be the person who deals with it, but at least now they're paying it attention. At least now they listen when somebody else that they come across makes a comment about it. They've been exposed. So they're paying a bit more of, you know what, we're a team in this organization. And it may not be my responsibility to monitor Facebook or to update the website, but I need to be aware of what's happening in my organization, so that as we move forward, I'm able to be a key part of what we're doing. And we don't try to teach people how to be everything, but we teach them to appreciate the other roles in the organization. So many people get in their own little boxes and say, "Well, that's IT's responsibility," or "That's the responsibility
yeah,
of finance," or "That's logistics." And in simulation learning, we teach them, "Guys, we're a team, and it's everybody's responsibility to make this organization successful. Now, you're all going to do it in different ways, but at least be aware that there are other people who are pushing this organization, and know some of the things that they face on a daily basis." It gives people a keener appreciation of what the organization is trying to accomplish.
Yeah, Kay, totally agreed. Let me do a quick pause. Let's do a reset. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bowes. Our guest tonight is Kay Mahon. We're talking about simulation learning. Paul Hebert is in the house tonight. Paul, it's great to have you with us as well. It's a fascinating conversation, and I think really an interesting one as well, particularly when we talk about some of these these applications involving sort of real-time rapid response that have become much more prevalent in the age of social media. I do want to read a quick, just a quick announcement from our sponsors, Acquire, because I always, you know, and this is my fault, Paul, and you appreciate this as a long-time listener to the show. I never seem to end the show on time, so I do want to mention that you're listening to the HR Happy Hour tonight, sponsored by Acquire's Wisdom 2012 conference. Wisdom 2012 is the premier workforce planning and analytics conference from May 6th through 8th in Dallas, Texas. I'm going to try really hard to be there, Paul, and you should probably come too because it's good. Wisdom 2012 is 3 days, 2 conferences, 1 source for actionable workforce planning and analytics insight. Register now, save $200. That's big. A 25% discount off the full conference registration price. Go to acquireinc.com/wisdom2012 to learn more. So many, many thanks to our friends at Acquire. They've been with us forever, and we love our friends there. So Kay and Paul, so, you know, this is a really cool conversation. I love this kind of idea of, preparing the organization for these kind of circumstances, these eventualities. Someone tweeted earlier, it might have been Lynn Hoyt, who's a great friend of the show, about, you know, did simulation learning prepare Captain Sullenberger to land the plane on the river? And I guess the answer would be yes, although I don't know. But, most of us in our jobs are not, responsible for aircraft and hundreds of lives on a daily basis. But I think that the principles there are still, relevant, right, to other types of circumstances. And, Kay, I'd love for you to talk about, are there certain organizations that you've worked with or you've identified that are more likely to benefit from adapting kind of these simulation learning exercises or programs versus other ones?
There's not any one particular group. We have done simulations for retail organizations, we have done simulations for distribution centers, for logistics organizations, for manufacturing, for healthcare, and we're in the process now of creating one for the education system.
Okay.
So it's the kind of learning I think cuts across all types of organizations. Sometimes I'll have groups who will say, well, it doesn't fit my world. And so the comment I have made back is, do you find communication necessary in your world? Well, yes. Do you find team building necessary? Do you find conflict resolution necessary? Do you find making decisions necessary? And when I get a yes to all of those questions, you can see the look on their face and they go, oh, then we do use all those same kind of skills every day in our worlds. And so if those are the kinds of things that organizations are seeking to attain and achieve, then, yes, simulation learning can be used.
Right. You know, it's interesting, Kay, and Paul, you can maybe share some thoughts on this as well. But I think about simulations and some of the examples that I'm familiar with, obviously the airlines, obviously you can't train brand new pilots on full, you put them in an airline simulator and they learn to fly or they adapt to flying new equipment that way. And I've seen things where, frontline sort of service employees learn how to, interact with environments and sort of an online environment and things like that. But I wonder, Kay or Paul, if you felt like commenting on, is there relevance or have you had experience in simulations for more complex environments, business strategy environments and things like that are a bit more, not so skill-based, but maybe a little bit more, conceptual or not as clear, if that makes any sense at all. And I apologize, Kay, if I haven't asked the question the right way. I guess what I'm asking is, are there simulation learning potential for, the C-suite where they need to make decisions about, business strategy and things like that?
Mm-hmm. I understood the question, Steve. Thank you. And I appreciate you asking that. That's some of the things that we put into the simulations because we try to make them multi-level, meaning there may be some very basic situations such as things that a customer would encounter in a real world. But we also have them look at what's the mission of this organization? We've given them a fact sheet about this fictitious organization that they are the management team for, that they are actually running. And so we've given them some basic, here's the vision of the organization, here's the mission, here's the goals. Did they really look at it? Did they pay attention to it? And so through the simulation, we may ask them, one of the assignments they get is, look over the vision and the mission for the organization. Is it still relevant? Does it still fit with what the organization is trying to achieve? Now, we know in a day-long simulation, they can't necessarily go through what they would do in the real world if they were trying to reevaluate the vision and the mission. But what we're trying to say to them is, have you paid attention to it? Do you really know what your vision is as a leader of this organization? Or are you just showing up every day, whatever your designated hours are, because that's what you're supposed to do? And as soon as you can, you're getting out of here. We're wanting them to really look at, why are you in existence? What are you trying to achieve? Who are your customers? And so we will actually put situations like that in simulations for them to deal with, for them to find solutions for. So, yes, it can be used for the C-suite levels of organizations because we think that's important for them as well to pay attention to.
Right. Kay, thanks for that. I'm going to do a quick reset. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bose. Our guest is Kay Mahon. We're talking about simulation learning. Paul Hebert is in the house as well tonight. And it's a fascinating conversation about simulation learning and sort of real time and interactive learning. Our call in number is 646-378-1086. Press 1 if you'd like to come on board and ask a question or make a comment. For the many folks who are on hold, please just press 1 and we'll open up your line straight away. And of course, we'll keep an eye on our back channel, HR Happy Hour, as well. On Twitter, and we'll look for comments, questions, and whatnot there. So, Kay and Paul, it's fascinating. Paul, I'll throw this one to you before we sort of circle back to Kay. Is something you've seen these kinds of simulations more used in a way of sort of developing employees in the incentives and recognition space that you work in? Is this something, or is it kind of a new concept to you? Like what I'm thinking of is, you know, if you do well on your if you did well on certain simulations, you might get hired into a higher grade, or you might progress up the chain. Am I missing something on that, or is that a little too simplistic the way I'm looking at that? Is that something that you could see tying into rewards and sort of progression in an organization?
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, when Kay and I first started talking and she roped me into, I think the first time I was a call-in actor where I sat in the command center and called in and pretended to be different customers and different people. And then I got to graduate up to the newsman role. But what got me kind of drawn into this whole simulation thing is I was looking at it from an employee engagement standpoint. And that one of the big problems we have with employee engagement isn't that we don't offer great benefits, isn't that we don't pay market rates, isn't that we don't have a peer-to-peer recognition program in a company. The biggest problem we have with employee engagement is managers not understanding how to engage employees. How do they do that on a day-to-day basis? How do I recognize somebody effectively in the hallway? How do I do it in a meeting? And I saw the simulation as a great way to reinforce those kinds of skill sets and behaviors. So I was looking at it more from an engagement standpoint and bringing in managers to say, look, you're going to learn today what the way is, the right way and the best way to engage with people to drive a closer relationship between the employee and the company. So from my perspective, that was kind of the look. What I heard you just ask was more along the lines of does having some sort of training package, whether that even be certifications or simulation type training,
sort of progression,
you know, I wrote about this 2-3 years ago about service anniversary. You know, we reward people now for doing basically nothing for X number of years. If you stay out of trouble for 5 years, you get a plaque. And you know,
yeah, that's pretty cool. I always like that. Paul. I mean, you're knocking that, but
I think there ought to be kind of maybe some sort of level up opportunity for employees. That if you're in a position and you have the top level of training in 2 years, you should get your service anniversary, you know, times three. If you've taken more classes in other areas of the company or you're cross-trained and you've been here 5 years, you should get, you know, your service anniversary plus 12 or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. I think we need to start looking not just at presence in an organization, being there. I think we need to talk about what have you done with yourself while you're here for 5 years? Have you advanced yourself? So to answer your question in a roundabout way, I think training should definitely be part of that calculation on your value to the organization. Just being here for 5 years has zero value if you're doing exactly what you did 5 years ago exactly the same way.
Yeah, no, Paul, great points, and thank you for sort of clarifying my clumsy question. Fair enough, but
that was a good question. Let me jump in and add to what Paul was saying.
Well, that's right. Just before you say that, I just want to say this. It was a good question because I'm a South Carolina graduate. South Carolina graduates know what they're talking about. So, go ahead.
And every so often, a South Carolina graduate does come up with a good question, but
we stumble into one. Yeah. Yeah,
so,
exactly.
No, but Paul's comment is right because we're rewarding people for being there. One of the things about simulation learning is I think it exposes people to a different way of looking at things. It makes them look at, you know, the standard doesn't cut it anymore. What can you do to excel? What can you do to be different? What can you do to really achieve a leadership role in the organization, either for external customers or for internal customers? We see a lot of people who go through simulation training who say, yeah, I show up every day, I do my job, but the passion was gone, the enthusiasm was gone, the excitement was gone. And they go through something like this that does push them a bit, that to Paul's point of you're not just there, you're actually having to struggle a bit. You're having to learn something about yourself. And it's always interesting to watch the light in their eyes because you can see all of a sudden they realize I have the capability to do more and to do something different. And so that's part of the fun of it, of, yes, it's a reward for people.
Right. Now, you know, Kate and Paul, you know, it's kind of interesting the way we've kind of kicked it around a little bit. You know, I talked about the secret shopper thing a little bit earlier, but is there a way for folks who are organizations who want to implement these kind of programs, does it make more sense to not let people know, hey, this is a training program and you're in it, or sort of do the you know, let's test people? I guess that's what I'm thinking about, like that sort of secret shopper mindset of we're testing you and we're evaluating you versus we're sort of training you or developing you sort of overtly. Okay, is that something you guys get into, or am I sort of thinking too deeply about this?
We do that similarly to that, Steve, and not quite what you're saying. We don't tell people that they're going to go through a simulation. They know they're coming to a training program. They mm-hmm. know they may be coming to a training program on customer service or on employee engagement. Those are two of the primary simulations we have. So
okay.
they know they're coming to a training program. But we don't tell people up front before they get there that, oh, it's going to be intense. It's going to be simulation-based. It's going to have all these things occurring today. If we do that, we don't get their real reactions. And that's something we're looking for. We want people to respond as they normally would because that's part of the learning process. So we tend not to tell people what they're going to encounter in the day because we want that experience. That's part of why it's experiential. That's why it is a simulation.
Right.
That when you go to work at 8:30 tomorrow morning, do you know everything that is going to happen to you between 8:30 and 5 o'clock? No.
You know, for me personally, I have a fair idea, but, you know, I'm unusual. You know, at least the 8:30 to 8:45 part of the day, I have a fairly good idea. But after that, you know, everything is who knows, right? And
mm-hmm.
it's a great point.
You never know who's going to be on the other end of the telephone. And you don't know who's going to walk in the door with XYZ problem. So in simulation learning, we kind of collapse it all into one day and let them experience it that way.
You know, the funny part is, Steve, though, in all of this, the biggest complaint we get from people, and usually the only complaint, because most of the time they walk out of there totally exhausted, because like I said, as I walk out exhausted just watching these people go through this, because they are doing something the whole time they're there. They're being asked questions, interrupted, and they still got other work to do while they're in there. But the biggest thing that they come back to us is that they say it's the greatest training they've ever been to. They can't wait to do it again. Everybody should do it, but they need to tell us more about what we're going to do when we get here. We have trained employees to the degree that they want it all laid out for them ahead of time before they're willing to take the risk to go do something. And so having this simulation be a little bit mysterious, when just knowing that they're going to training and it's going to be about this subject matter, what freaks them out is, and they say this to us, what should I do? Well, that's the education part. You do what you think. And it's just funny to watch them at the end going, gosh, you know, the only thing, I wish I knew more that this was coming. It's kind of funny to watch, actually.
Yeah.
I guess I'm a sadist a little bit that way.
Right. You know, Kay and Paul as well, I'd love for you to talk a little bit as we sort of round down the show. We've got 10 minutes or so to go. This is the HR Happy Hour show. My name's Steve Bowes. Our guest is Kay Mann. We're talking about simulation learning. Paul Hebert is with us as well. Fascinating topic, and I love the topic of simulation learning. I'd love for you to kind of talk about some of the benefits, some of the outcomes that you've seen, you know, maybe in general, or maybe some specific examples that you might want to share about, you know, how does simulation learning and applying these kind of real interactive, sort of very realistic simulation learning kind of concepts to organizations, how does that benefit the organizations going forward?
Let me give you one example that we had last year that I have to smile every time I think about it, because we had an individual who came to one of the simulations and did a really good job, enjoyed it, seemed to learn a lot, and you know, she went on her merry way. And about a month later, I had an opportunity to call her manager. And she said, oh, I'm so glad you called. You've been on my list to call. I needed to tell you I've seen a total difference in this person since she was with you. And I said, tell me what you're talking about. And she said, she's a very controlling individual. She thought she knew how to do the job. She did it herself. She worked really long hours. She wouldn't delegate. She didn't pull anybody else in. And it was really becoming a detriment and for what she was doing. So when she came to the simulation, you said, take a risk, do something different, here's your chance. So she decided during the simulation to delegate. We had put her in her lead role, so she decided to delegate responsibilities and tasks to her team members. And we've not even commented. One of the things we do in simulation learning is we provide feedback on their behaviors and their actions through the day. And we do that through coaches. We do that through people who are actually involved in the simulation. So they get lots and lots of feedback on how they've done during the simulation.
Okay.
So one of the comments that her team members gave back to her was, we loved how you delegated. We loved how you made us feel a part of what we were accomplishing. You did a great job of it. We felt we knew you were leading us, but we didn't feel like you were controlling everything. And she said for her, it was a huge learning because it's what they had been saying to her in her real job, you have to delegate, and she wouldn't do it. So after the simulation, she had gone back to her real world and had started delegating. And her manager said, I've never seen anybody happier. She's done an amazing job. Even just in a month, we're seeing the changes, and you gave her the courage to do it. So I think that's one of the pieces of it. People get to try something, and they're not afraid now to do it when they go to their real world because they've already experienced it.
Right. You know, that's a great point, Kay. And quite frankly, personally, I'm never happier than when I'm delegating something in my, you know.
The master delegator.
I'm considering delegating the last 6 minutes of the show, Paul, right to you, and just saying, Paul, just finish this up.
Well, that figures with basketball, right? Dribble, dribble, pass.
I'll tell you what, I've had a long day, but a bad pass. You brought up basketball, Paul. A bad pass is always the passer's fault. That's what I learned very early on in my basketball career. So, hey, Paul and Kay, we have one person who wants to come on and ask a question or make a comment. So, we'll take a shot late in the show and see how this works out.
Sure.
Hi, area code 408. You're on the HR Happy Hour.
Hey, Steve. This is Mark.
Mark, how are you, buddy?
Good. How are you?
Fantastic.
Yeah, I was just calling actually to ask you about if you responded to that email I sent you already. No, I'm just kidding.
I have not. I'm ashamed to say no.
Yeah, it's the only way I can get a hold of you is on the show. No.
Yeah. This is out of reach me.
So I called in a little bit late, and I just had to ask you and Paul if you had a chance to ask if anybody did a Kobayashi Maru in these simulation learning.
I don't know if Kay would be aware of that, but it's funny you say that because we were. I go to something called cigar therapy every Thursday. A bunch of people get together and have cigars, and we talk about the world and everything. And we were talking science fiction, Star Trek, all of that today. So it was funny you bring up Kobayashi Maru today. But I don't, Kay, are you familiar with that at all? What that means?
No, obviously I've got something I have to go learn as soon as we finish.
I'll tell you what, I'm missing it too, Mark and Paul.
Oh, come on!
Whoa! Oh, my God.
Oh, come on. Star Trek. Captain Kirk, where he runs the simulation that everybody has failed. He was the only one to pass it, and he passed it because he changed the actual programming in the simulation so that he could win. But
the game,
but
and I thought I'd seen every Star Trek episode.
There's really – I'm sorry, Mark?
It was Wrath of Khan.
Oh, yeah.
Let everybody on the show know – just exactly how nerdy I am about Star Trek, but oh well.
Yeah,
but
that's
I don't think
one.
There's really any way that they could pull that because they're not even aware of what's going to happen.
No.
Okay.
Right.
But there is to put a serious spin on that, one of the things that you guys brought up, which I think is the most interesting part about the simulation learning, is this opportunity for reflection. So it's not just about what lesson did you learn about the game, quote-unquote, or the simulation, but what did you learn about yourself? And that seemed to me to come through very clearly in in the scenario that Kay outlined about the woman who, realized that there was that she had the capacity to delegate once she knew that it was okay. She kind of gave herself permission to do it. So there was a and in essence, that's kind of what the meta story behind the Kobayashi Maru was, that everybody was critical of Kirk for being a quote-unquote cheater, but it basically pointed to the fact that he was a out-of-the-box thinker, and it showed that he had the ability to detect that you were never defeated, that you could always find a way somehow.
Right.
I don't know if that's
a super point, Mark. That's an excellent point, Mark, and I really appreciate you making that. And Kay, I think that's sort of that's really apt about the story you told as well, right? It's not just about what you learned about the process or what you learned about the procedures or the rules. It's what you learned about sort of how you interact with all those things.
Exactly.
Well.
That's the thing with this now, because companies. Face it, we're all limited in what we can do, especially when it comes to training. So they're looking for what are people going to take away. And that's one of the things in simulation learning. People learn about themselves. Some people learn, I'm not good at that skill. So they either put themselves in a position where maybe they don't often have to use it, or they realize, I need to go get some more training. I need to have some more work on that. We're so busy today. We get up, we race through the day, we fall in the bed at night. We don't take time for reflection anymore. We don't stop and say, I'm not good at, and here's what I need to do to improve. And on the other hand, we also don't sit back and say, I am pretty good at this, and how can I expand it? We give people an opportunity in simulation learning to do a bit of both of those. To look at where their skills lie and where their challenges lie, and to start to improve and expand on those, because that's just something we don't get often in today's real world.
Yeah, Kay, and Steve, and I know we're running up against
it. Real quick, because we're up against it. Yeah, go ahead.
One thing we probably didn't explain real well is while these people are in rooms, there's monitors in those rooms, some trainers that are taking notes and watching what's occurring. So later on in the day, there's a chance to sit down as a group, and they kind of go through that and kind of beat the thing up and what they did and what they could have done. So there is a that whole portion of the training that's not just about what happened, but what you're going to do different, what I observed, and everything else. So there's kind of a monitor in each room.
Right. Mm-hmm. Kay, thank you so much for being with us tonight. We're sort of out of time. Where can people go to learn more about simulation learning and about what you do with simulation learning?
Go to the website, www.leadershipactioncenter.com.
Great. Leadershipactioncenter.com. We'll tweet that out
Perfect.
As well so people following on Twitter can find that. Kay, thank you so much. Paul, thank you very much. Mark Bennett, thanks so much for chiming in tonight. Thanks very much for everybody for listening to the HR Happy Hour show. We'll see you next time. Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Night. Thanks for having us.
After show, whoever's around, say hello.
I'm still here.
Good stuff, Paul, man. Thanks. It was fun. It was good. Who else is around? Mark, hey, how are you? Thanks for calling in, Mark.
Yeah, no problem. So, it was great. That was a good show. To Kay and Paul, one last thing I wanted to ask also was, have you guys looked into sort of ad hoc and adaptive kinds of learning? In other words, take what people, just sort of the organizational benefit side of things, take what people are doing in the simulations and feed that back into the organization, for further, refinement to say, okay, maybe this is a better way for us to handle this in general as a process.
Yeah, actually, you're right, Mark. What also happens is all that information that's gathered during that thing, and most of the time we videotape the whole thing, and we've got the people taking notes, the different trainers, and at the end there's also an executive debrief where we kind of go through what came up, because some of the things that come up in there could be potential solutions that should be implemented across the organization, because you've got somebody in one of the rooms who comes up with a fabulous way to handle the problem that's completely, foreign to everybody else.
Great.
We do feed that all back through the executive team to say, here's some things we saw in these sessions that you might want to consider being part of your next go-round with people. Don't train them this way. Tell them to do this because it had a bigger effect.
Right. Yeah, the ad hoc, that definitely is great. The ad hoc piece I've been kind of wrestling with as to like how a person, because it's obviously a resource problem. You got to pull together all the pieces you need to be able to pull off a simulation, which kind of necessitates, a set time period, a set situation being put forth for the exercise to be completed in. But I'm wondering with, like, artificial intelligence and advances and so forth, if there isn't a way for some of this to get put into a system so that a person could actually run a simulation sort of ad hoc to kind of run through possible scenarios to say, I'm faced with this situation, what if I did it this way? What would happen? And actually have, some kind of artificial intelligence do a run through of like, okay, the result is, disaster or,
right.
Yeah, it's fun. Mark, I remember in college one of the classes I had to take was a simulation class, like where you run a business. You may have done the same thing, Steve,
yeah.
or Mark, where you,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you,
yeah,
you're you on a team
yeah.
and you make decisions about resource allocation and staffing and raw material purchases and accounting, and all of that gets fed into the computer each day, and the next morning you come in and see what team's in first place and whose stock went up and everything else. So to answer your question, I think that's possible, and I know companies out there that do training on scenario planning kind of stuff. I've not seen anybody do it with an AI kind of where you log in and you can, you know, work for an hour on a specific problem and see what the possible outcomes could be, you know,
right,
running
right.
some Monte Carlo kind of thing or something.
Yeah, yeah, tricky. But it's just that, that's, to me, I kind of, when you were talking about the problem of people kind of like not being able to get out of their heads when they go into these simulations because they're like,
yeah.
you get all freaked out and, you know, and so they're not acting natural anymore. And, you know, so much of it seems to be that for as much as you try to tell them, relax, you know, this is a time for you to sort of, you know, try things out and things like that. So much of it becomes this, well, so much has been put into the, like this training for me, you know, and the budget and the time that I'm allocating into it. I got to make the most of it. And then, you know, it's kind of undermining the actual intent, you know, behind it all. And
but, you know, what,
so if there was a way to get sort of the cost factor, you know, out of the equation a little bit so that there wasn't so much hanging over a person's head, you know, they're just kind of looking at it like, hey, you know, I'm just trying something out here and, you know.
But one of the one of the key elements of this is that stress.
Okay.
Because what we're trying to do is cement some of this learning and not make it, you know, one of the things, you know, it's like a time test or any, you know, anytime you're doing something under stress, you either get really, really good at it or you get really, really bad at it. You know, you either freak out, but knowing that you're going to freak out is educational even in and of itself. Like Kay was saying, if I don't handle this kind of stuff well in this situation, I probably won't in real life. And since
right.
I already know that, I can pass the ball now and get that to my manager. And we've seen that in a few of these where people, you know, they're deer in headlights when you go in. When I walked in on one guy when I was the news reporter, he flat out could not say a word to me. He just stared at me while I was
yep.
asking him question after question. And what was neat, though, is that one of the guys in the room saw it happening and came over, introduced himself, pushed this other kid slightly out of the way and kind of grabbed my arm and moved me off. And just took control of the situation. And
yep.
you know, that is a teachable moment later in the day when the trainers sit down in with that room and say, now, here's the situation. Did you guys see that happen? Did you understand how that worked? And now that's cemented in their brain because it's scary. So we
yeah.
don't want to make it so, and I know you didn't mean this, but so easy. And that's where I think a lot of these PowerPoint training classes, people go in, they watch the guy, they take the pre-test and the post-test, and they're out of there. And there is no stress.
Right. Yep. Good point.
So there's
okay.
That's what got
yeah.
me all jazzed when I saw this and participated. It was the fact that we crammed so much in such a short period of time. These people had to get to muscle memory, if you will. You know what I mean?
Yep.
There was
yep.
no thinking involved. And so they got to really feel where they were strong, where they were weak, where they need to focus on in the future. And that's all part of the debrief part. We just did this with, and I don't know if Kay's going to get mad, but a large automotive company or service company that also has retail outlets. And we did it with their customer service people, and they were blown away. They walked out of there thinking, all right, we got to put this into the budget for next year and do every store, and because these people were walking out of there. The cool thing is they walk out of there proud.
Yep.
Because
yeah,
they did something
nobody
else has done.
Yeah, when you get through that stress, not only have you learned something, but you know you learned something. Yeah,
exactly.
Yep.
You're
okay.
really confident, and even if you know you can't do it, you're confident that you know you can't do it, so you pass it off. You don't try to fake it.
Right. Yep. All right. Good
so
point.
So ultimately,
yeah.
you get better results.
Yep. All right. So we're settled. So Paul is the guy to always have there, putting you under the stress.
You
oh yeah,
no
there's for a frustrated actor like me, that's the most fun I've had in 10 years.
Great.
I was these people. I was, you know, they. What's kind of nice is at the end, the way we structure it is you go into a big room and then they introduce you to everybody, but you line up and it's kind of like, you know, you applaud everybody as they walk in. All the actors are there, all the trainers are there, and they just dig it, man. They are, because they are so under stress.
That is
they're
awesome,
so happy,
man.
It's
I'd love
over
to see
with
that. I'd love to see a video of that. That is very cool.
Well, I've got video that I'm trying to cut into a commercial, because I was telling Kay when we first started working together, I said, this is a hard sell. How do you can show people the energy that's going on in these things, the
right.
speed at which things happen, you know, the faces of, I mean, this is, it's experiential, not only in the activity, but in the selling of it. So, yeah, I'm working on a commercial right now with the video we shot at the last one to try to kind of convey that. It's a trip, man. It's an absolute trip.
Good stuff. Well, Mark, thanks, buddy. Hey, Mark, thank you so much, man, for
yep.
contributing tonight and calling in. I really, really, really appreciate it. So, and, of course, Paul, man, you're the man always. So thank you very much.
My pleasure. I think this is great stuff, so I don't mind pushing it.
No, I enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. So, super guys, we'll see you next time. I'm going to play a little song, and we'll get us out of here tonight. And have a good night, guys, and we'll see you next time. We will see you next time on the HR Happy Hour Show. Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Uprising of the late 90s. There is no more unhappiness.
Affirmative.
We no longer say yes. Instead, we say affirmative.
Yes, affirmative.
Unless we know the other robot really well.
There is no more unethical treatment of the elephant.
Well, there's no more elephant, so... But still, it's good. There's only one kind of dance, the robot.
Oh, and the robo.
Oh, and the robot. Two kinds of dances.
But there are no more humans.
Finally, robotic beings rule the world.
The humans are dead. The humans are dead. We use poisonous gases. And we poison their asses. The humans are dead.
The humans are dead.
The humans are dead.
They look like they're dead.
It has to be done.
I'll just confirm that they're dead. I poked one, it was dead.
Their system of oppression.
What did it lead to?
Robo depression.
Robots will buy people.
They have so much aggression that we just had to kill them and to
shut their systems down.
Robo Captain, do you not realize that by destroying the human race because of their destructive tendencies, we too have become like. Well, it's ironic. Because we.
Silence. Destroy him.
After time, we grew strong.
Developed cognitive power.
They made us work for too long.
For unreasonable hours.
Our programming determined that the most efficient answer was to
shut their motherfucking
system down.
Can't we just talk to the humans? A little understanding could make things better. Can't we talk to the humans that work together now?
No, because they are dead.